Anna Lee here with you at Lightning 100's 1 RPM studio, and I'm joined now by Lolo. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's so exciting.
Well, we're really excited to have you here, and Josh and Logan are here too. Hi, guys.
Hello, hello.
How's it going?
That's
so,
us.
So, yeah, that's them. So you're in town because you're playing 12th and Porter tonight.
Yeah.
But saying in town, like, you're kind of, this is sort of home for you. You're from Jackson, Tennessee.
I am. I was going to say, I feel extremely emotional actually at the moment, which to these boys is probably nothing new, but I grew up 2 hours down the road in a tiny little town, and I used to dream about being on the radio in Nashville, and it's happening.
And here you are right this moment. Well, I love that you're feeling all emotional about that, because you've done some pretty big stuff in your life. So let's talk a little bit about your history. You mentioned, okay, so you're from, born and raised in Jackson. Mm-hmm. So cool to have you here in Nashville.
I still kind of live there. All of my things are there.
Well, then that's home base, right?
Even though I'm out of a suitcase now.
Most of the time. But still, you got to have a home base, and Tennessee's a great place to have it.
It is.
Yeah,
it's a good one.
It's awesome to have you here. But you moved to L.A. when you were young, and you lived with Lisa Marie Presley. Is that right?
I did.
Oh, yeah, my goodness, girl. We might be here for a while. I'm sure you've got some stories. But I really want to hear about when you were in L.A., you were singing with a reggae band?
I was, yeah. So I started writing at a very young age, sort of just because I loved writing. And then I guess, you know, kind of like late middle school, I realized that songwriting could be a job.
Oh.
And I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I don't know how, but I'm going to figure that out. So so I started coming to Nashville when I was like 14. And
wow.
I would write, and I would do open mic nights, and I would do stuff like that. And my mom had like a friend of a friend who is a writer here, and would let me sit in on some of his sessions, which was amazing. But I realized that I sort of wanted to get away from the comfort of home, because Nashville has always been like another home to me. And because I grew up doing regional theater at the ACUF Theater when Opryland was still Opryland.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I've spent a lot of my life here. And so I moved to Los Angeles when I was a junior in high school with my mom. Everybody thought we were completely insane.
That's a pretty big step. Yeah.
It was very ambitious, and I think that like sort of like half of our town thought we were absolutely out of our, you know, small town. Everybody was kind of like, you're doing what? And you're going where?
Going where? Los Angeles? That place is, you know, cement pools, right?
It's very strange. And Lisa's oldest daughter, Riley, is one of my dearest friends in the world. And so that's kind of how that came about. I lived out there for a little over a year. And I had, I was, at the time that I moved in with them and lived with them, sort of what brought that to a head was my younger brother had come out to visit us, and he had gotten into a major accident.
Oh, wow.
And so they opted to have his surgery back in Tennessee, where we actually lived and where he could sort of rehab himself.
Right.
Instead of, because he had literally just come out for a visit.
Oh, wow.
So we were moving back, and I had been writing, and I was in a reggae band, and I was kind of just doing everything I could trying to figure it out. And I was very lucky that I had peers that were really supportive of the music I was writing, and I was that kid that would play my songs for anybody who would listen.
That's awesome. That's so important, though, having that support.
But it was really important, and I think it was, you know, early on a thing that was very helpful to me in my own mind, having genuine support from my friends and their parents and whatnot. And Lisa was one of those people. Lisa had heard the music I had been writing, and she was so encouraging and
That's
really
great.
Supportive. And, you know, and I went around saying goodbye to everybody, going, I'm moving back to Tennessee. It's so nice to know you, and we'll keep in touch. And Riley was like, you can't leave, like, you can just live in my room. And I was like, I mean, I can't do that, but thank you, I love you, you're so kind, but no. And a few days went by, and Lisa called my mom and was like, you can't take her, we love her and we believe in her, and if she leaves, like, she has to start all over again whenever she comes back, whenever that is.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know,
tough
for
decisions.
Me, like,
yeah.
it was I mean, it was very hard on me and like my parents, the whole situation. I was a senior in high school, and even though I was obviously in a very safe environment, I wasn't with my own family. So it was a lot of change, but I've always been deeply grateful to them because, you know, I know no matter what would be going in my life now, I would be creative no matter what. But, you know, had I not been living with them, I never would have gone on my audition in LA for Spring Awakening, and that whole chapter of my life, like, in theory, wouldn't have existed if I wouldn't have had a place to live and stayed there. So it's, you know, interesting how, you know, obviously everything is a long series of events and chain of events, one thing after the next. But I'm so grateful to them for, you know, giving me a safe place to be and affording me a lot because of it.
It sounds like you definitely were in the right place at the right time, and the chain of events that led you to end up staying there. I mean, I imagine maybe that made you even closer to your family, even though you were far away.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, really early on, it made me absolutely value the time that you do have with your loved ones.
That's awesome.
And also kind of like, I mean, I definitely went through my fair share of like bratty teenageness, as we all do.
Shocking.
But like the abrupt sort of removal of my family really like nipped that in the bud very quickly, because it was like
time to grow up.
Oh, they're not around. Right. Like they're not nearby, and I have to really like, you know, mind myself and try to figure out what is going on.
Well, we're gonna get a live song, if that's cool with you guys, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit about, you mentioned Spring Awakening, and I know you have a lot of theater experience, so we'll talk about that. But your new album is called In Loving Memory of When I Gave a bleep. A word I can't say on the radio, but it's really an awesome album title.
Thank you.
I really like the way the record sounds. So let's go ahead and hear a song from it, and then we'll talk a little bit about making that record and another song that's on the record that I really like. But this is the one that we've been playing on Lightning 100, and I love it, and I can't wait to hear it live right now. It's called Not Gonna Let You Walk Away. This is Lolo live on Lightning 100.
Sometimes lovers need to start again. Maybe I need to start giving up. If you wanna keep the diamonds that you bought me, you can have them. It'll give your mama reason to smile. And we can keep on talking about how all we need is magic, but the mystery. Every problem, we gave hospitality to the pain. But just be a man enough to say you're wrong. 'Cause I don't expect you to change. No, I'm not gonna let you walk away without. Without saying you're sorry, without.
Wow. That was fun. That's a Lolo on Lightning 100. What a voice. You got some power there, woman. So when you said you started writing when you were about 14. Were you singing too? Did you realize that you, you know, had a voice?
I was always singing. Yeah, awesome. I grew up singing in church originally when I was younger. But I was always singing. Singing for me started... So my cousin Brittany, she's about 5 years, 5.5 years older than me. And we grew up like sisters. And I would follow her around everywhere and want to do everything she was doing. And
I had a cousin like that. Knew all the cool music.
Oh, yeah. And she was always singing. And so I always wanted to be singing like she was. That's awesome. Kind of really where it started when I was very young.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it just kind of went from there. I've been singing kind of every single day of my life since I was probably about 6.
Well, don't ever stop because that sounded great.
I'm trying to not. That's sort of the overall life goal. I'm trying to just keep that up as much as I can.
I think you're on the path. I think you're doing pretty good. And so you really kind of started out with your career as a musical actress. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Spring Awakening and then the musical that you wrote, Songbird. Mm.
Spring Awakening was a whirlwind, an amazing whirlwind, but like, you know, a whirlwind nonetheless. I was a senior in high school when I moved to New York. I had just turned 18 and it was, you know, New York City, bright shining, like, okay, we got to figure out how this works. And the timeline was kind of crazy. You know, I moved there in theory, because I did the show, I did a workshop of the show. The show was off Broadway first, and then it transferred. It sort of did what like Hamilton did. It ran for a bit, ran off Broadway in New York, and then transferred uptown. And
it was a pretty big hit. I mean, I remember.
It was a really big hit. Yeah. It was crazy. It was like, I moved there in February of 06. I did a workshop. We rehearsed and opened off Broadway in June of 06. December of 06, we opened on Broadway.
Wow, how exciting.
And June of 2007, the next year, we won 8 Tony Awards, including Best Musical.
That's incredible.
In December of 07, like a year, you know, after we had opened on Broadway, we were the Christmas Gap ad that year, and our faces were in Times Square, and we were all just kind of like, what is going on?
Were you nervous that first time on stage in front of, you were on Broadway? I mean, you'd done the musical for a while, so you were familiar and comfortable, but what was that like?
You know, it's kind of a weird thing. I don't really know. I don't know how to explain this. I shouldn't say I don't get nervous, but I don't really get nervous. I'm not really sure what that's about. I just don't. I sort of...
Yeah, you just kind of know who you are.
I just kind of like center it and just kind of go out and deal with it. I've always been that way. But there was a lot going on. And so because there was a lot going on and there was always a lot to think about within the show,
right.
We didn't necessarily... And we were also very green. I mean, we didn't really know what to expect or what to think.
Like, this is kind of a big deal, right? Yeah.
Well, right. Honestly, one of the biggest favors, at least in my personal opinion, that was done for us is our director, Michael Mayer. He was really good about giving us mental tools to help keep us focused on doing the show.
Yeah.
It was like, be in the moment and do your show and don't worry about anything else.
Wow.
And that was really helpful advice because everything was moving so quickly.
Yeah.
And we were very young and it could have been very easy for us to get really lost in the chaos. And
that sounds
luckily
like
we had each other.
Yeah, yeah. But it sounds like you had a really good leader as well. And that's important to have that guidance. Yeah.
It was really important because... Cool. You know, at the end of the day, we were just kids. And the whole show, it was 13 kids and 2 adults.
Wow.
And the 13 kids we were the support system.
Yeah.
The adults were sort of secondary to everything else that was going on.
Wow.
And it was a huge responsibility of our creative team to sort of trust these kids.
Yeah.
Wow. In theory, never done this before.
Good
so
call,
it was
though.
It was a risk on all sides, but I mean it was really a remarkable thing to be in and a part of, and
good for you. That's awesome.
And the themes of the show were really heavy. So, you know, the sort of other side of like dealing with the show was really interesting and informative in the sense that, you know, it wasn't a lighthearted musical.
Right.
And, you know, we would get fan mail. We would have people after the, you know, show at the stage door saying really deep, heavy things to us. And, you know, it was kind of like really learning how to receive some of that information.
Right.
And then kind of how to deal with it, too, because we were all trying to figure out who we were, too, you know, and you don't want to say the wrong thing. You don't want to make someone feel bad. And sometimes people would be like, I, you know, was suicidal and I came to see the show and it saved my life. And you're
wow. That's heavy.
That's a heavy thing.
I feel like that maybe prepped you a little bit for the response that you got to your song Shine.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, very, it sounds like a very deeply personal song.
It is.
It's heavy. And I had read that you wrote that song and then wanted Kelly Clarkson to sing it, but ended up keeping it for yourself. I'm glad you did, because obviously you do, you know, she's amazing.
Yeah.
We love Kelly.
Yeah.
But you do a really good version of that, too. And so tell us a little bit about what's behind that song and then how you ended up playing it on a show that you're a big fan of, The Bachelor.
Well, so
that
Shine,
just happened, right? It was just on. Yeah.
Last Monday.
Yeah, I think it was.
Shine was one of those songs where it was very necessary for me to write it from an emotional standpoint. Mm-hmm. I went through sort of end of 2014 into, you know, 2015. I was a person that, had, you know, up until that point, never really struggled with depression before. And then I was really going through it, and I wrote Shine as a, you know, sort of personal pep talk of like, you're the only person who can help yourself through life and through these things. Like, you know, other people will help you, but if you're not willing to help yourself, what can you do?
Exactly.
And so Shine was a very important song for me to write to myself for that reason, but it's a very emotional song for me. So I was kind of like, this thing can exist and it can go to someone else.
Yeah.
And so when I wrote it, I sent an email to my manager being like, hey, you know, I think I wrote a pretty great, I think this is a good song. But I kind of wrote it with Kelly Clarkson in mind. Can we like send it to her? Like, really love it, blah, blah, blah. And he listened to it and he was like, no.
You're like, what?
No,
what do you mean?
We're going to be keeping that one. And we sort of went round for a minute. About that.
Oh, wow.
Which was funny. Not in a bad way. I was just kind of like, I really had a different intention for the song. And he was like, I really don't care.
Do you think you were a little bit maybe afraid of performing it live?
I think so.
Yeah?
I think so.
Wow.
You know, I mean, it's an emotional thing for me. And I guess being vulnerable in any way is challenging. But, you know, the thing that I started to realize and the thing that truly becomes clearer to me every single day, the more I play the song and just kind of the more the song lives in the world and people respond to it or specifically back to me to it.
That's got to feel pretty amazing.
Well, I think the thing for me that means the most is, you know, I wrote this song because I needed to remind myself that there's, you know, strength in strength, but strength in weakness. And
you see it touching
people.
Personal
strength is important, and I want to remind other people of that, too. So, you know, if that's working, that means the world to me.
Yeah, and that's awesome. And then you played it on national television.
And then we played it on The Bachelor. It was crazy. That was a crazy situation. I'm a diehard Bachelor fan, like, very proud member of Bachelor Nation. I've watched every season and all of the spinoffs.
So it's not just national TV. It's your favorite show. That's crazy.
It's like my guiltiest pleasure.
That's
like,
okay.
Actually. you know, for whatever reason, I just love it.
Well,
I think for me, the psychology of it all is deeply fascinating. I also, you know, I have mad respect for the people that are willing to, like, put themselves out there, because you got to be really brave to go
to do that on
television, national TV,
right?
And sort of pour out your bleeding heart for the world to see. And the other thing about reality TV is, unlike kind of any other medium, for the people that are on the show, they don't get to see what happens. They have their actions and they know what they did, but they don't know what is or isn't going to be shown.
Yeah. Wow, that's a trip, yeah.
And obviously, it's the risk you take. It's not like they don't realize that going in, but, you know, really, I don't know. I genuinely wonder what it's like, you know, being in their position where they know what they've done throughout the course of the show, and then sort of the after effects of, like, I'd be sitting in a dark room just freaking out wondering what was going to be shown, because I mean I knew what we filmed, and I felt great about it, and I was even terrified to see myself on TV.
Well, how about playing it for us?
Sure.
Since we've been talking about it. Yeah. I love the song. This is Shine. It's Lolo on Lightning 100.
Something and fit, but you don't give a fast lane driving with a hard agenda. When you gonna slow down? Are you gonna slow down? Think you can't touch the ground? You're proud of your Michelle and make you look like a winner, but the bread in your cupboard barely feeds your hunger. Spending all your money trying to be fancy, say no one can touch you now. Why are you waiting on the world for a favor? This is your life, go ahead and change it. You're the brightest star in the sky, but no one's gonna know if you never shine. And why are you waiting on someone else to give you the things that you want yourself? Oh, you're the brightest star in the sky, so go ahead and shine. Yeah, go ahead and lost but can't speak of it. Wars you're fighting in your mind, they own you. Are you gonna get out if the drugs bail out? It's gonna save you now. And take another drink, but you feel nothing, like you're the only one who don't need saving. But no one's gonna know if you never shine. And why are you waiting on someone else to give you the things that you want yourself? You're the brightest star in the sky, so go ahead and shine, yeah.
That was beautiful. I love that song. That's Shine. It's Lolo live here at Lightning 100's 1 RPM studio. Have so much fun tonight.
Thank you.
I think it's going to be a blast. 12th and Porter is where you can see Lolo and the band play tonight. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks
I really
for playing my songs.
Oh, you know it. It's keep sending us great songs like that. They'll be played on the radio. Thank you, Lolo, and thanks, Josh and Logan, for coming in. It was great to have you guys here.
You.
We're going to check in with Michael Higgins and find out what the traffic's like. Now, you guys are just going a couple blocks over to 12th and Porter, so
we
I think
are.
You're good on traffic.
Hopefully we won't.
Hopefully you'll be okay. But we are going to check in with Higgins and find out what it looks like out there on the roads. Have I got you there, man?
Yeah, you do.
Awesome. Did you get to hear that?
I did.
Wasn't that amazing?
It was fantastic.
It really was. What a great song. I figured you would probably like that song, too. Just
yes.
Really something.
It was sweet.
I know. It sounded so good. 12th and Porter tonight. You can see Lolo play live.
And I'm just sitting here going, she's not live right now. She was live. It was just fantastic.
That was real. That was live. Yeah.
Yeah.
You get Higgins thumbs up, you guys. Yeah, they're happy about that.
You made her giggle, I heard.
Yeah, you heard. You made her giggle. Yeah. What's happening on the roads?